This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. I probably should have looked it up. I think this is episode 632. I think I got that right. Anyways, if it's not, well, it's whatever episode is in the title of the thing. So we're fine. We're fine. It's been a good week. Everything's puttering along. Didn't quite get as much done on the major projects as I wanted to this week. We had just a little excitement. We had a report scale out on us. Ran okay. Didn't run great, but it ran okay. Just running it manually by hand. 30 seconds, which isn't great, but you know. And then we put it into the overnight process and it scaled out. And it decided that it wanted to do a table scan, which happens sometimes with SQL Server and reporting services when you are running reporting services from the web services. SQL Server decides it's going to do a different execution plan. It sometimes picks badly. When it picks badly, then your little report that ran in 30 seconds is still running after 12 hours. So then we killed that, and then the rest of the schedule ran, and unbeknownst to me, the what's called the date card, which is kind of the brains of what we're doing at any given time, had already been changed, which means some data got updated with incorrect dates. And so then when we ran the next night, three of our big processes just didn't run. Like looking at the emails going, what just happened? But we got it figured out, and last night everything ran fine. We should be closing the month tonight. Hopefully that will all go fine. We won't know till we get there, but you know what? One way or another, we'll be okay. So work is good. Writing is good. All is well there. We're puttering along. We're starting up some small groups now at our church. And by virtue of the fact that my wife is on staff, we are small group leaders, and they're doing small group training for the next multiple weeks here. So that's an hour and a half, you know, 2 hours-ish by the time you get the front and the back stuff. That is getting cut out of my Wednesdays. So, you know, I've got a little extra push that I have to do, and I was about ready to give it up last night because I still had 400-500 words to go. And I thought, nah, come on, Phil. Come on. Keep moving. So I got some words down. We're going to find out tonight whether they were worth anything, but I got some words down. So that's puttering along. I'm on chapter 11, I think, of the book on schedule. I have 3 more weeks here before I am supposedly finished with the first sprint of book 15 and start hearing back from the beta readers, although I have already started hearing back from the beta readers. So that's good. And that's book 14, so then I do the production version of that starting in June. So it'll be interesting. I'm figuring out more and more what's actually happening in book 15. So that's always interesting. I'm telling myself a story as we go here. And trying to tell myself a story that I find interesting. I still don't know what I'm doing for the epilogue, although I have bounced around a little bit with a couple of different possibilities. And even as I'm saying I bounced around a little bit with some possibilities, I'm thinking of other possibilities. So, well, I'm sure it'll be fine. We'll come up with something. Jesus always helps us. Costumes are fun. Had a fun day Star Wars costume. It's fun. It's always lovely when someone you don't know is just out of the blue striking up a conversation with you. And then at the conclusion of that conversation, of course, they want a picture. And then at the conclusion of the picture, they say something like, "You've made my day," or "You've made my week." So those are all always good. As I said on my little reaction videos, I did need some new tires on my car. So I went over to another Walmart where they didn't know me and wore my little R2-D2-2 outfit over there. And happened to know some of the people that were over there who had come over from the other store that I normally go to. And I was jabbering and we were talking and I was doing my shtick and all that kind of stuff. And finally, one of the new ladies that I hadn't met before kind of looked at me and said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Oh, I'm just a guy who last year when COVID hit decided I could dress up in costumes every week and try to make people smile." And so that seemed to satisfy her. Tomorrow, hopefully, is a costume that will make people smile. It is Mother's Day once more. So this will be the second year for this Mother's Day costume. It is a costume that I designed specifically to make women laugh as much as possible without regard to what reaction men would have to it. Last week, it worked out very, very well. We'll see how it goes this, or last year. We'll see how it goes this year. You just never know who you're going to run into. So, we'll see. So all is well there. So, all is well with the family. You know, it's good. I don't know how much of I can do this before I actually get home. I do have some notes, but this is one of those ones that I need to adhere fairly close to my notes because it was a YouTube video that I came across, called, was it a YouTube? I think it was a YouTube video. Pretty sure. Called Why the World is Going Crazy and How to Win Back Our Minds. Now, that's a very definitive statement. So if you would read that title, you would assume that there would be a definitive answer for why the world is going crazy. And honestly, the guy gets pretty close and has some good things to say. And a definitive answer for how to win back our minds, because that's what the phrase "how to win back our minds" means. As it turns out, it's not necessarily how, but a list of suggestions that might. That's right. They're doing our road. I forgot. They're doing our... I am not doing this. So, I'm turning around. Because there's a big, long waiting line, and I ain't doing that. I'm going around the back way. So, anyways, thank you for waiting me. I was turning around, doing a U-turn, and a guy very kindly waited for me to get done with that. So, anyways, I think the guy has a lot of good things to say in this article, because a lot of what he says are good observations, and they are things that are occurring. But when he gets to the how, things kind of, I mean, what he says for the how is probably good, but I felt like saying when he got to the how, and so the first part, why the world is going crazy. I've been doing a lot of these podcasts here lately because this is really interesting, at least to me, that we are in this very fundamental shaking right now, where I feel like we have been in a situation where we've been running on fumes. That in the 60s, we decided we didn't need moral frameworks anymore. That we could just kick God out of our schools. We don't need prayer. We don't need Ten Commandments because that's promoting religion. And we don't need religion anymore because we know everything. And so this has been going on, and everybody's been, look how open-minded we are. And look how generous we are. And the only people who are closed-minded and condemning are those people who are old and are still, you know, tied to the old moral systems. And look how free we are. And now, so fascinating that the very people who were proclaiming all their freedom and all their tolerance and all their how great we are and look how wondrous and kind, those are the same people that have now moved into an authoritarian, belligerent, condemning. I mean, it's just so fascinating, but it is that way because the flesh doesn't have many tricks. And so the very tricks that the flesh was pulling on established religious thought to turn people into zealots, to make them unkind and unforgiving and condemning and finger-pointing and you're going to hellish people, those very voices. Oh, rats. I slowed down. Sorry. I slowed down too quickly and it just slung my recorder right off the little pad it's on. Sorry about that. Sorry if you're listening on headphones. Sorry. So, you know, the very attitudes that were promulgated by the flesh in people who were part of established religious traditions is the same flesh that is working in people who have finally, we've developed finally enough agreement on this new belief system that it's pushed into zealotry. And then out of that zealotry has come this new wokeism and cancel culture and all those things. And it's just so fascinating to watch this. So that's kind of what this guy is talking about in this article. So these are his words, not mine, but it's interesting. So his name is Jamie Wheel, I think, W-H-E-A-L, Wheel. He said, it's really easy to forget that we're just monkeys with clothes. Okay, so fine. If you took all of life on Earth and you compressed it into one 24-hour day, evolutionarily speaking, that's my commentary, not his. Autonomically modern man shows up at the 4 seconds before midnight, cave paintings at 1 second before midnight, and we've been playing at civilization for a fraction of a second. So, there you go. He comments about our life now, that everything is going into exponential change, from education to quantum computing to cryptocurrency to transport to macroeconomics to geopolitics. To climate crisis, to everything. It's breaking our brains. I would have a caveat there and say it's not necessarily breaking our brains, it's giving the flesh a lot to work with. And then we are giving vent to the flesh and allowing the flesh to break our brains. Because for those who are living the abundant life with Christ, none of this stuff ultimately means that much. It's fine. You know, we get up each day facing the same challenges we have always faced. Hear his voice, follow his path, love our neighbors, love our God. That's it. Those are the challenges. So anyways, he goes on to say, we're overwhelmed, we're collapsing in grief. It does feel that the handrails, the things we used to look to for stability and security, have just evaporated. If we've experienced a collapse in meaning, how do we go about restoring it? So his name is Jamie Wheel. He is the founder of the Flow Genome Project, and he's the author of Recapturing the Rapture, Rethinking God, Sex, and Death in the World That's Lost Its Mind. Okay, so he says that he thinks this collapse of meaning that you can argue that we're in the midst of now is complex and multivariable. He said we've had the collapse of organized religion. Well, maybe. He said you might call that meaning 1.0. He said for the first time ever, the none of the above, when it comes, is the largest and fastest growing religious movement in America. Okay, these are people who don't want to be a part of organized religion. And frankly, I don't blame them. because a lot of times organized religion has not lived up to its ideals. We have allowed the flesh to creep in. We have allowed ourselves to be taken over by principles that are not necessarily the principles of Christianity or the principles of Christ. They are the principles of business and management and all those things, and it's not how Jesus told us to go about it, but we're doing it anyways because we feel we need to. Okay, that's our decision. I'm getting my mail. One moment. See what we got here. Okay, not sure what that is. Alright. So you have this collapse and this in organized religion, because what people are looking for is not structures, is not processes, they're looking for relationship. And unfortunately, what we have given them at times in organized religion is more just a club. You come, you sit here, you give your money, we do the thing, you get happy for a little while, you know, maybe you have something that you can work on. But, you know, there's a whole lot of churches where that's pretty much it. I'm grateful to have a son-in-law and a church where they are doing their best to make progress. You know, and one of the things that we are doing is this whole small groups business, but they are trying to do it in, they're looking at, you know, everything that works, everything that doesn't work. They're trying to craft something that really gets to the heart of what people need, which is, of course, fellowship and meaning, and et cetera, et cetera. So that's 1.0. He says there are increasingly folks that feel like, hey, those stories, those codes, those ways of being don't match my identity, don't match my choices, don't match my community. Okay, well, so organized religion is no longer a place. He said, at the same time, modern liberalism has also been getting creaky. That's meaning 2.0. He said, think of the ivory tower in academia, news media, business, corporate titans, leadership, potentially even medicine, and you just take one of those and you just go by one. And he says, well, like Goldman Sachs sold Middle America down the river in 2008. McKinsey helped Purdue Pharma sell more OxyContin well after the negative effects were demonstrated. The New York Times, Wall Street Journal, which used to be considered journals of record, are now imploding. Same thing with Doctor, the same thing with corruptions in peer review and the replication crisis. He said, basically, everything you've seen on a TED Talk is probably not true. I don't know if that's it. So he said, all the places we used to have rules of thumb or decision-making shortcuts, that's evaporated. So in that collapse, we're getting fundamentalism on one side, nihilism on the other. See, I don't think that's quite true. I think we're getting fundamentalism on both sides. We're getting diseases of despair. We're getting real heartbreak. He says, I think you can make the case that that's why we're all seeing this uptick in conspiracy theories of all stripes. who will make sense of all this. He thinks that if you can give me a happily ever after, if you can tell me I'm one of the good guys and you promise to get me to the other side, hundreds of thousands of people these days are deeply vulnerable to that promise. And he calls those rapture ideologies. So we can see examples of that with ISIS and Christian Zionism, but I think what is equally important to note is that they show up in Wall Street and Silicon Valley. All these rapture ideologies share the same structures. I thought this was interesting. So, one, the world is skewed. Two, there's an inflection point coming. Three, as soon as we get there, the elect are going to be saved. And four, let's get there as fast as possible, so don't worry about the collateral damage of the world we're leaving behind. Now, certainly there's a lot of things that could qualify for that. The whole critical race theory certainly could qualify that. They do believe that the world is screwed. They do believe that a change is coming. They do believe that when the change comes, if you're anti-racist, you are going to be saved. And if not, you're going to be swept away. And they wanted to get here as quickly as possible. They just want to burn down all the structures that exist, and they don't care what comes after that. So yeah, there you go. He says, so the question then is, how do we create liberating structures so that a lot of people around the world can experiment, innovate, and adapt their own approaches to finding meaning and restoring meaning without it coming tops down? So he doesn't want it to come tops down. So he wants there to be meaning, and he wants there to have all of the good stuff of really presenting religious thought well, mystical experiences well, spiritual thought well. But he doesn't want it to come from outside. He just wants it to come from us. And normally when someone says they just want it to come from us, what that really boils down to is, I don't want to answer to anyone. I don't want responsibility for my behavior. I just want to be free and do whatever I want and not to feel like there's someone watching me and potentially saying you could do better. So he says, from meaning 1.0, we need healing, inspiration, and connection. From the more modern liberal side, we want to be open source. I'm guessing that what he means by open source is that everybody gets to contribute. They just get to, well, I feel like it's this. In other words, there's no top down. We want everybody to have access to this. Needs to be scalable, really cheap, or outright free. Okay, sure. And then it needs to be anti-fragile. Okay. As Mike Tyson says, everybody's got a plan until they get hit. So the idea of an anti-fragile solution is one that that actually digs in and gets stronger, more rooted, more effective as things deteriorate around it. So he says, if you want to do things that everybody has access to that are effective, start with evolutionary drivers like breathing, sexuality, embodiment, substances, and music. Okay, so he's trying to get back to primitive things there and, you know, use those things. So this is how he concludes the article. So that would be the hope for meaning 3.0. It doesn't promise promise an out for an escape. It doesn't promise a happily ever after that is structurally different from right here, right now. We need tools to mend our trauma, tools to reconnect with inspiration, why we're here and what that means, and tools to better connect with each other. If we can do all that, then we stand a chance of recapturing our rapture, our bliss, our contentment, our belonging, our passion, and the story of who we are, the story of where we're going, and the commitments to figure it all out together, what we do now. Okay, in other words... We end up with a bunch of frou-frou stuff at the end there without really any clear plan. Now, maybe he just wants us to all go read his book. And just from that, I would assume in his book what we're talking about is some kind of meditation, some kind of enjoyment of music. I'm sure there's a physical pleasure aspect out in there because he's a guy. But it's interesting. When he talks about the things we need this to be, I read through this and go, we already have that. And it's called a true relationship with Jesus Christ. It's not the organized Christianity relationship with Jesus Christ. It's the true relationship with Jesus Christ. Okay? So he says we need healing. From 1.0, we need healing, inspiration, and connection. Well, if you look at what Jesus said, you've got everything you need there for healing. You've got everything you need there to choose the narrow path that leads to life. You have everything you need for inspiration. Paul says we are his workmanship. We are his creative endeavor. We are his poem, in other words. That there is inspiration there. And there is connection. And you will never find true fulfillment until you get connected. Until you first get connected to the creator of the universe. And you feel his love towards you. And outgrowing out of that love is your ability to connect with others. So yes, you need those things. He says we want it to be open sourced, but it's not open sourced. It has a single source. And Jesus is the source. And he's the one who gives us guidance and leads us. And we have to recognize him as the source. Because what we are trying to cultivate in this solution is the ability to hear him, to follow his path every day as he guides us and he helps us. That's where true contentment comes from. That's where abundance comes from. He said we want everybody everywhere to have access to this, and it needs to be scalable. Yeah, well, honestly, the teachings of Jesus are very scalable. And if we had used his approach, which is go make disciples, get some guys, teach them the depths of relationship, and then have them go get some other guys or gals and teach them the depths of relationship, that will scale very, very well. And it needs to be really cheap. Yeah, well, salvation is a free gift. Or, as he says, outright free. And it needs to be anti-fragile. And I would contend that there are few belief systems in the world that have been put under as much pressure and as much persecution as the teachings of Christ and have prevailed. So if you're looking for something anti-fragile, it already exists in the teachings of Christ. It already exists in what Paul tells us about flesh and spirit and what he tells us about love and what he teaches us about Jesus and the Godhead. All those things already exist. And the only thing that doesn't fit with everything that this guy is looking for is the fact that it's not a top-down design and you don't get to just go around. And the reason you don't get to just go around is because you are not just in good faith trying to find a solution. You have a flesh that's inside you that is fighting against that. And so you need external help. You need a top-down design that can help you deal with that and explain to you what's going on. And that is what the belief system that Jesus Christ gave us does. We don't need another solution. We need to get back to the solution, unencumbered by all the stuff that we layered on top of it. Because we wanted to build buildings. Because we wanted to build organizations. And we wanted to feel like we were a part of something we could see and say was tangible there. See that structure? That's what I'm a part of. Jesus never did that. And in fact, anytime a structure tried to form up around him, he did things specifically to knock it back down. Because he was investing himself in a few guys, knowing that they were going to go out and do other things. Now, did Jesus expect that we were going to end up, you know, building what we've been building? Sure he did. Sure he did. He knew. Because he's Jesus. And he still works in all those structures. But unfortunately, if you have all those structures, people make the mistake of thinking those structures are what Jesus taught. And they're not. What Jesus wants for us is the abundant life. And that abundant life only comes through a depth of relationship with him from quieting our hearts. This evening, I have a lot of things that are trying to disquiet my heart. We're closing tonight, and we're closing actually a little late. It's the 6th. We like to get closed before that. The trouble is, the way the weekend falls, we like to have all the money going out to the missionaries on or before the 10th. In order that to happen, since we're hitting a weekend here, we really need to get closed tonight. Now, we've been closing fine. We haven't been having any problems. It's fine. It'll probably be fine. But, you know, you never know. Things could go wrong. If they do, we'll do our best to get them fixed. Hopefully everything tomorrow will go smoothly when they're closing missions. They're going to be on a little bit of a scramble to get everything done and sent out by Monday. But, you know, step at a time. So that's one thing that's kind of on my mind, but there's nothing I can do until it comes, and then we'll see what there is. Beyond that, it's Mother's Day tomorrow, which is the crazy costume, one of the crazy costumes. And it went well last year, but it is a costume that causes heightened reactions, both from women and from men. So, you know, there's always the possibility that you're going to get some guy who really gets torqued off. I've been able to handle that just fine up until now. You just never know. So last year, there were a group of young men, two or three, I think. And I was dressed up in the Mother's Day costume, and they came around the corner, and they thought that was the greatest thing ever. They were like, whoa, you should come back, and you should party with us. I'm like, gentlemen, I really appreciate that, but I have so many things I've got to get done. I was talking to a Walmart worker at the time, and her eyes were getting big, and she was like, oh, man, what's going to happen? But it was fine. You know, we just kind of weaved our way through it. So, you know, it'll be fun. It's interesting because I can already feel the backwash a little bit of the costume coming up tomorrow. You know, there have already been a few things that I would normally have in focus that, you know, and I can't remember what was it? I don't know. Anyways, but there's been a few things like, oh, Phil, get your brain where it needs to be here. You're going to be fine. Oh, but it's so fun. And I just think it's so important to celebrate, really celebrate in crazy ways, Mother's Day, because Mother's Day is such a phenomenal holiday. This thing that women do, it is astonishing. We had a colt born out here this week. Our neighbor has horses that he breeds, and my daughter Elizabeth, I call her Lizzie because we've called her Lizzie forever and ever, she came out Tuesday morning and she said, I saw a bunch of horses standing in the pasture that's closest to their house, and a bunch of horses were just standing there looking at this other horse, and this other horse was down on the ground. And she said, so I thought, oh, maybe I better go see what's going on. And so she said she kind of approached a little bit and she looked, and this foal is half born at that point. She texted me. She said, this horse is being born right now. I was coming back from a run. So I went down there. Most astonishing technology. Mother's Day. What an amazing, amazing thing. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.